Welcome back, folks, to another episode of Business from the Bass Boat Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Deacon, and today we've got an awesome show lined up. Last week, if you missed it, did a show with Chuck Pippins from Icon Boats talking about their new model in 2024, released at the Bassmaster Classic. Super cool model breakdown from Icon. I just think they're great folks. They're making an incredible product, and I'm glad that they are making a more price point boat versus the big release of their first one. So super great show. I've got some great feedback there. So if you did miss that, go ahead and tune in to that. But today's show, super exciting. It's something that another kind of combines a passion of mine outside of bass fishing, tournament bass fishing. I'm a big fan of real estate. The different intricacies around it, potential income from leasing and all this kind of stuff. It's all an interesting thing to me. And this is a super unique model in my eyes in mostly the state of Texas, but this is more than anything, I guess let's just bring Steve in here. We've got Steve, the founder of Private Water Fishing based out of the Dallas area.
Yeah.
How's it going, Steve?
Good. Good. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. No, certainly appreciate you taking the time out and excited to talk about everything you've got going.
Well, great. We're excited to share.
Fantastic. Well, yeah. So, I guess for folks who don't know what private water fishing is, you guys have a great social media. I've seen a lot of different things there. From Tyler Reels fishing stuff, and then just your social media in general, I think does a great job of capturing. But I guess explain it for folks who maybe are not aware.
Sure. We're picture us a little bit like Airbnb for fishermen. We lease access to about 100 private lakes in Texas and Oklahoma, and we have a membership who pay us to fish on those private lakes. That's in essence the business model. We work a lot. In fact, we started this 28 years ago before Airbnb or VRBO or some of the more, of course, before Uber and more of the sharing economy got started. So I guess we didn't, hindsight, maybe I should have been Airbnb or VRBO, but we've been doing it a while and it's a model that's worked and it's been a whole lot of fun.
That's fantastic. It's just super cool to me. I mean, especially you think of a place like Texas where there's incredible bass fishing and there's also an incredible amount of private land, right? I mean, 1% of Texas or something is public compared to the amount of deeded ground just in the state. And there's a lot of ranches that have some really cool bass fishing. And I think, It's a great way for folks to have a more curated experience, a higher quality experience on those bodies of water. How did it all begin? I mean, it's been around for a long time, but where did this idea and conception of this idea come
from? Well, first, it would be misleading to say that I started it or I came up with the idea. The company's been around for 28 years. I bought it 14 years ago, so I've had it for now roughly half of the time. But the idea was started actually by a company that's still in existence today called Rocky Mountain Angling Club out of Colorado. They have a very similar business model where they lease rivers and streams in Colorado. And we took the founder took the same idea 28 years ago and started doing it with private ponds, tanks, lakes. We call them lakes. It sounds a little sexier, but some people call them ponds. They started at about 10 acres and go up to, we have got one that's 160. Kind of the wheelhouse is 20 to 30 acres is probably the average size. But that's how the idea started was just like anything, you take what you hope is a good idea and try to make a business model on it. We didn't reinvent anything. We just took it on. I was a member in 1992, and then I wound up buying it in 1999, changed the name. At the time, it was known as the Great Texas Bass Club. We changed the name to Private Water Fishing in 99, and we've been going at it since.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, hopefully too, through this, it's interesting. We look at our analytics on our show stuff, and Texas just is synonymous with bass fishing, right?
Yeah.
And myself as one of the hosts on this show and Business from the Bass Boat, I'm in Idaho now, originally from Colorado, and then Bailey and Andrew are up in New York, and our largest listenership a lot of the time is in Texas. And I think that's because of the amount of people that are bass fishing in that state. And so it's really interesting to me to see something like this. And on the smaller bodies of water too, I think that's a big deal. And are folks able to access these bodies of water via a kayak? Are they able to put a boat on one if there is a boat ramp, or is it from the bank? What's the structure look like there?
Yeah. So it's all from a boat. Can you bank fish? Yeah. But, 10 acres is a lot of water, 20 acres, 50 acres, a lot of water. Plus a lot of times it's tree lined. So you want to fish from a boat. We provide a simple John boat at all our properties. Our members will bring a trolling motor and battery. And then probably 10% of our lakes, we've got full service bass boats with foot control trolling motors. You just show up and go. And probably 50% or half the time, our members have their own boat, whether that's a kayak to two-man plastic boat to an aluminum boat, and then all the way up to a 22-foot Ranger, what have you. So about 20% of our properties have concrete ramps. So if you wanted to fish out of a full-service bass boat, and it would limit you to probably 20 or 30 lakes of the 100. So you would be a little bit limited, but a lot of times the ones with concrete boat ramps are, are better lakes. The owner has put some money into the amenities of the property. So yeah, you'd want to use a boat, and the short answer.
Got it. That makes sense to me. Just as far as from an owner's perspective, if they've got a concrete boat ramp there, they are curating that property for fishing. And therefore it's probably got a little bit higher quality management and all of that that goes with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. And so when you are targeting a property or like we talked a little off air, you're headed down to go look at some potential new club properties. What does that process look like for you? Are you going and fishing it? Are you doing a fish survey? How do you, someone can, like a lot of this farm and ranch business, everyone talks about the best hunting in the world on this property, but there's a lot of nuances there when it comes to the quality on a specific body of water.
Yeah. So finding properties, especially in the beginning, was the hardest part of running the business, trying to find landowners who would be interested to have us, on their property. So when I first started, I thought the whole model was the money would be the most important thing to them. And for many of our landowners, the money is not first or not even second reason why they do it. Now, nobody turns the check down. They all want the money. It's never a... please don't pay me. But a lot of times it has to do with the management of the lake. And so I found out pretty quickly, my background was not fisheries management, was not biology. I was a finance major, was in the printing business for the last 16 years prior to doing this. So I learned pretty quick, I better learn how to manage a private fishery. So I surrounded myself with some of the brightest minds in the nation. And it's a small little cottage industry, but there are dozens, maybe 100 private lake management companies in the United States, and probably a third of them are in Texas, maybe fourth of them. So I started attending some meetings, found out pretty quick who were the players were, and I latched onto them, and they were nice enough to share with me their experiences, and kind of self-taught on how to manage a fishery. So that's one of the major components and one of the major things we sell at Private Water Fishing is the lake management aspect. So how we evaluate a property is we have an electrofishing boat.
Okay.
It's a survey boat. It's the same boat that our state and federal agencies use to monitor our public waterways. We're one of a few dozen people probably outside state and federal agencies that have one of these boats. And then we have our own fish hauling equipment, our own trucks and trailers where we stock lakes We're typically stocking forage to feed the bass, whether that's bluegill or tilapia or threadfin shad or any, all the above. And then, you know, just sometimes our owners have full service lake management companies, and I act as a sounding board to, you know, confirm or maybe give a second opinion if I have a issue with something that was written in a report by a lake management company. But sometimes they just need, hey, am I getting ripped off here? Is this a good deal? Or do you agree? And most of the time the lake management companies are spot on and I agree with everything. But every once in a while, it's good to have a second opinion, no matter what you're doing.
So, got it.
Yeah.
So in regards to the management component of mm-hmm. the business, so you approach the landowner, hey, we think that if there's potential of this being a fit for our club, and kind of here's our structure as far as payment goes. In addition to that, we're going to provide management on the property itself after that initial electrofishing, saying, hey, we feel like we can work with something here. What does that look like?
Yeah, so not every landowner is interested in management. Some of them don't want to do anything. It is, you know, it is what it is. And if y'all would like to fish out here, you know, let's talk. Some guys are like, that's the only reason I'm into this is I want to learn how to manage the lake. So when my kids or my grandkids come out, you know, the fishing's better for them when we fish it, when you guys aren't out here fishing. So with 100 lakes, you have to find out what the goals are for each landowner, and they're all different. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but I'm pretty good at ferreting out what their goals are and then trying to see if we can structure a plan or idea that fits what works for them. Some guys, every dollar they make, they put back into the lake. If they make $10,000 a year, they put $20,000 into the lake. So some take the $10,000, go to Cancun a few times. You know, it's just whatever they want to do with the money. And $10,000, I'm using that as an arbitrary figure. Our landowners make anywhere from a few thousand to $30,000-$40,000 a year, just mm-hmm. depending on the lake. And proximity to a metro area is huge.
Okay.
So you know, the lakes that are within an hour of Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, Houston, tend to be our busiest lakes, but they're also the hardest to find. It's hard to find water that's 30 or 40 miles outside a metro area. Those land prices are expensive.
Sure.
Yeah. So
no doubt.
Some of our better lakes are a little further out, 2-3 hours outside of a metro area. They're bigger bodies of water. But our membership, if the truth be told, really prefers to fish close to home. They want to be at their grandson's soccer game at 2 p.m. on Saturday. So they'd rather go out for a half day, knock off. And I should mention they have the whole lake to themselves. Mm. So we don't mix members on the lake. So when you book the lake, it's yours and yours exclusively for the day.
Wow.
Which is huge. That's when we do surveys with our members, that's if it's not number one, it's number two of the reason why they're a member.
Mm.
It's that exclusivity of having that whole property to yourself.
That's huge. That's really cool. I mean, that's kind of to me, a big part of the private water aspect of things is having it to yourself in that situation. So I've been a part of some different duck clubs, especially in Colorado growing up, and waterfowl clubs. And there's always a different process for booking, right? Like, you know, some guys, it's a snake draft on here's the days you can hunt in the year. Here's the days like you get for your season. Others, it's a call-in deal. You know, what's the process for booking a lake for a day for somebody?
Yeah, since we're not a brick and mortar, our customers see us through the miracle of the internet. So we have a pretty robust reservation system. In fact, we have a full-time employee in the Philippines that does nothing but work on our website. And so we've developed a custom piece of software that allows our members to book online. So it's all done by advanced reservation only. So as a landowner, a member never comes unannounced. Our landowners are notified via email and or text
okay.
that Adam and Steve are coming out on Tuesday. So the landowner has their name. The landowner doesn't need to say hi, bye, thank you. We take care of all that. We provide the gate code. We provide GPS directions. And then once you get on the property, if it's a 2,000 acre ranch, you know, it's like, heck, where do I go now? So we have maps written, or pardon me, drawn maps of where you go when you're, you know, on the property. And so that's kind of how the whole reservation process works. Our members receive an email with all the information they need. And, you know, a lot of times we have something might be unique to that property or special to that landowner. Once in a while, I have a landowner says, I don't want any alcohol. So we have no alcohol, or I want barbless hooks, or, you know, various things that might be unique. Make sure all the gates are closed. It's an active cattle ranch, you know, all the stuff that you may not think about if you're a city guy, you know, accessing, a private ranch. So, and then we also on that reservation will tell you if we're harvesting fish, which is a huge component to our business model, is taking out the smaller fish. That's one of the five pillars to managing a private fishery. You have to do adequate harvest. And so most of our properties, we're harvesting bass 14 inches and smaller, and some 16 inches and smaller. And then at all our properties, if you catch a catfish or a crappie, you're welcome to take it out. And our members go back after the reservation and report back to the office how many they removed. And we actually give them a small rebate. It's more of a thank you. If you'll tell us, you know, you removed 37 fish, 14 inches and smaller, we give you a little money off on your next trip to any property. And that's part of our promise to our landowners, part of the management. I told you that if you've got a 70 acre lake and you need to take out 1400 fish, which is would be pretty common on a lake that size.
Is that annually or what's that?
It's annually. Yeah. Kind of a standard is around 20 pounds per surface acre per year in a typical lake. If that's provided, it's already in balance. So many times on a new lake, we get there and it's full of stunted bass that are 12, 13, 14 inches. And so that's the, you know, 90% of what we're electrofishing are the exact same carbon copy fish. And on those lakes, we may be taking 40, 50, even 60 pounds per acre for the first couple of years out of the lake. And it's amazing how the fish will respond. Now, it takes a few years. It doesn't happen in a year or two. It usually takes about three or four. And if we get aggressive with that harvest and we take them out, we really see the class size of fish move. That's even without adding additional forage. Now, if you add additional threadfin or tilapia or bluegill, we even see that process expedite even further and quicker. So,
yeah. So we have certainly had different biologists on the show talking about forage and things. And to me, the tilapia stuff is so cool. I love fishing lakes that have tilapia in them. And bass just seem to get heavy with it. How does that, I mean, that process work? So say you're full on board with a landowner that's wanting the management aspect of things. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're providing the takeout of smaller fish as part of helping with the management of said property. If you're like, hey, I think it's a recommendation we add some forage here. My first question would be, in your eyes, when are you leaning towards tilapia, bluegill, threadfin, a combination? What is that kind of just a real generalized approach, I guess? What does that look like? And then how often do you do that kind of a stocking?
Sure. Well, I'll answer the first part, the second part first. Often is really up to the landowner. This is his lake. We're fishing his, or I should say his or her lake. It's their lake. So we make recommendations they could choose to follow or not follow. And it really depends on the landowner. If I probably a fourth or a third of our landowners are actively involved managing the lake in some form or capacity. As far as what to recommend, I think that was the first part of your question. Why do we recommend tilapia over threadfin or bluegill? So I love tilapia. Tilapia are incredible. incredible spawners. So they're mouth brooders. That means they, when their fry are born, the female takes the young back into her mouth. So they have a very, very high success rate. And they spawn every 17 to 21 days when the water is above 70 degrees. And the warmer the water, the better they go. So they don't stop. Bluegills stop at about 85 degrees. Tilapia will go into the 90s. If the water temperature gets into the 90s, low 90s, which it can and does in Texas, tilapia love it even more. And so they make a crap ton of babies during the time that they're alive. The problem with tilapia, and really I shouldn't say the problem, the state of Texas only allows us to stock those in parts of the state where they die in the wintertime because they are an invasive or an exotic species. Mm. And there's horror stories of them taking over lakes in Florida, because they are so prolific in spawning. So we're only allowed to stock them. I think I'm one of 29 licensed exotic species license holders in the state of Texas. And so we stock tilapia in lakes where the water is clearer and we don't have a lot of fertility in the water. I don't know if I'm talking over your listeners or not here, but from a biology standpoint,
oh, this is great.
Clear water is sterile water. Sterile water doesn't grow fish as much as plankton-rich water, which is the base of the food chain. So if we have a plankton-rich body of water, we're likely, and it's big enough, 10 acres or larger, we're going to recommend threadfin shad. If it's a clearer lake, we're probably going to recommend tilapia. So threadfin shad are gill rakers, which means they're taking in plankton through their gills. And so you need that green water, green-brown water that's has a visibility of 12 to 30 inches, 36 inches, something like that.
Okay.
So, and I always get pushback on social media and things like, well, why am I growing? Why is California growing so many great bass, you know, when the water's 12 feet clear? You know, it's not that you can't grow giant fish in clear water. It's just that the more plankton rich, that's the base of the food chain, which is what's feeding invertebrates, crustaceans, little bugs, worms, et cetera, which are feeding the bluegill. The bluegill are feeding the bass. And so all of it goes together. There's so many things that go into growing a bass that to make it all work. So it's not that you can't grow big fish in clear water. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the water is less clear less water. It has less life in it. Exactly. Less life in it that you're not producing the base of the food chain. So I think I may have gone off course on your original question, but that's how it works from a landowner standpoint. We stock threadfin and we stock tilapia. And we also stock some other things. We stock more bluegill. If our bluegill numbers are low, we recommend stocking bluegill. And then there's another fish called a red ear sunfish. Are you familiar with red ear?
Yeah. And I've spent a lot of time on a clear body of water. Another one down on Lake Havasu in Arizona, where they grow mega red ears.
Yeah,
it is some of the most fun going out and catching those things. So
sure,
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And so we stock red ear usually for one reason: they're about double the price of a bluegill when we go buy them in hatcheries. They are more expensive. They have trouble coming to pelleted food when they're young, so the hatcheries have to charge more for them. But the reason we stock red ear is they stop the cycle of parasites and grubs because snails are the part of that cycle where they're causing the yellow grub to get onto the bass. So if you can break that cycle by putting red ear sunfish to eat the snail, then in theory, we're stopping the cycle of grubs and parasites that get on some of the bass. And so we'll recommend red ear. Typically when we stock a lake, we do 80% on a new lake, we'll do 80% bluegill, 20% red ear in a brand new lake. But a lot of lakes we get to and there's parasites and those fish look pretty beat up. And if we stock red ear, usually within a year or two, the fish look a heck of a lot better. So,
got it.
Those are kind of the fish. You know, we stock bass. I've stocked hybrid striped bass. I've stocked catfish, crappie. We've done a little bit of everything. But, you know, really, we're really stocking forage because our membership want to catch bass. You know, they want to catch big bass. And so Adding food is paramount to growing big bass, or, you know, if the lake doesn't already have a way to self-sustain itself. So.
Sure. Sure. That makes sense to me. And as far as big bass goes, I mean, you're at an epicenter at it in Texas, phenomenal bass fishing, big bass are grown all the time. We've heard so much about OHIV in the recent years, and, but on these bodies of water, do you guys keep track of big fish caught when your members are filling out their survey of what they kept? Are they also keeping track of what big fish were caught, those types of things? What does that look like?
Yeah, kind of formally and informally. So we have a big bass contest, you know, and, cool. You know, we get a percentage of our members that participate. It's by length instead of by weight, because some people's scales are different. And so you can't fake a length. So we do big bass contests by length. And then, yes, our members go back onto our website and they post fishing reports. And so you as a member can go and see not only what they caught, how many they caught. Sometimes our members are gracious enough to post where they caught on the lake. They'll take a screenshot of it, circle, hey, this little point here, or this place was holding fish and we caught them on, you know, rattle traps or whatever they caught them on for the day. Now, having said that, there's also a little bit of not always complete transparency on their fishing day.
Right.
You know, if they caught two nines and an eight, they may not want to share their great experience because they're afraid that it's going to be harder for them to book the spot for the next, you know, when they want to get back out. The reality is we already monitor the pressure. So we don't fish lakes back-to-back days. In fact, we rarely fish a lake more than 12 or 14 times a day. Even if we had the demand to fish it 30 days a month, we would only fish it 12 to 14 days a month. And a lot of our lakes are just fished 2, 3, 4, 5 times a month. So it depends on the lake. But we're artificially building in rest days, which to my knowledge, we're the only club in the nation that does that. Where if you were in Texas, there's probably several dozen what we call club lakes, where it's a 100-acre lake and there's 50 guys that are a member, and you know, you fish the same lake over and over, and you may get out to the lake and there may be 7 boats on the lake, or you may get out there and have the whole place to yourself. But with our model, it's one lake all day, all year, is totally private, so you always have the whole lake to yourself, as opposed to, you know, if that's important to you, where opposed to other what we call club lakes in Texas. And I'm sure they're all over the nation. I'm not just a Texas homer here, but that's kind of how most of the club lake things work. You know, you pay your dues and you pay a lot of money. You want to fish when you want to fish. I get it.
Right. No, I like that model with rest days built in. Certainly in the hunting world, I've seen that be super beneficial from a waterfowl perspective, and would imagine the same way with a fishery, right? I mean, those fish are less pressured. When you go out, you've got a good opportunity to have some pretty active fish.
Yep. And we have a small duck club, and we do the same thing on the duck side as well. Yeah, you're exactly right. The ducks don't like to be, you know, pushed every day.
No, that's awesome. Very cool. So what's the biggest bass, to your knowledge, that's been caught on a private water fishing property?
We've had some claims of 14s, several 14s. I'm not convinced they were 14, but we've had 2 13-7s that I felt very comfortable with. So I would say 13-7 every year. And again, we don't hear about them all. I mean, sometimes our members can be tight-lipped. And so it's funny, I'll be on the phone with one, or one of the guys in the office will be on the phone, and then we'll get off the phone. And she said, you know, that dude caught an 11, you know, at so-and-so last week. And I'm like, no, it wasn't on his fishing report. So it's really, really hard to say, but usually an 11 or 12 pounder will win the big bass contest each year. Some, you know, once in a while, a 10 and a half, once in a while, it takes a 13. It just depends on the year. So
teener class, phenomenal size fish though.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the Oklahoma stuff. I mean, you're right there, the Dallas area, as we've kind of seen, growing north, you're seeing a lot of activity in Oklahoma, Southern Oklahoma. What's been the process with those bodies of water? Is it the same kind of market of that Dallas Fort Worth folks going to fish those, or what does that look like?
Yeah. We've been in Oklahoma for about 2 or 3 years. And we've got quite a few lakes, probably a dozen lakes in Oklahoma, maybe 15. I don't want to say, because there's a lot of money in Oklahoma, I don't want to say there's not, but we don't see quite the level of commitment from a financial standpoint. It's a little more expensive for some of our Oklahoma, and that takes nothing away. I always have to be careful when I say that, but we tend to have our Austin, San Antonio, Houston, Dallas guys, maybe we've just been doing it longer there, but it's going okay. I wouldn't say it's been a boom, but we're it's building a little slower, I guess, than we would have hoped. So,
got it. I see. And I mean, no, there's no secret. Texas has a ton of wealth. And as far as a membership goes, mm-hmm. So what are your options as a member if you live in Austin and you're like, hey, I just want to fish these Austin lakes? Is it a membership? Does your membership go across all places? If you're traveling to Oklahoma and you see a lake you want to stop, what is the membership?
Yeah, it's based on you. So when you buy a membership, you have access to every lake in the club. So a lot of our members travel for business. And so it's amazing to me how many of them will bring their little boat, I guess, on a sales trip. And, you know, if they're going point A to point B, and they may book a trip and knock off 3 hours early on a sales call at 3 PM and go fish for 4 or 5 hours, you know, wherever they're headed. What's that?
That's speaking my language, Steve. Yeah. I've got a tournament Saturday, Sunday, and I've got to be on a ranch Monday morning. And I've got the boat behind me because Monday afternoon, evening, there's a lake right next to this place that I'm going to go chase some big smallmouth on. So there you go. I like that mindset, working and playing.
Sure. Exactly. Yep.
But sorry.
And then we have a new membership we implemented. We call it a silver membership, and that gives you access to 30 or 40 lakes. They tend to be our underutilized lakes that tend to be further. They're not necessarily lakes that aren't as good. It's a lesser price point to get in, but they tend to be further out. So if you're a guy who wants to, you're willing to travel 2 or 3 hours, and you could still fish on some really great lakes, but they're not going to be the lakes that are within an hour of a metro area. We're just trying to figure out how we better utilize all our properties instead of just fishing the, you know, 30 or 40 that tend to be around the metro area. So, and that's worked well. That's worked well.
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, it's a good way of kind of like the thought process of airlines, right? Your business class, and then you have to utilize other things. I mean, that's just applying to more audiences when it comes to things. So when it comes to costs around, I would assume this is an annual membership. Mm-hmm. And then same with the silver. What are the costs for a member involved?
Sure. So you pay, we'll start with the gold membership, which was and has been our primary membership forever. That's $425 annual fee. Your first year, you also pay a $300 application fee. So your first year, it's $725 all in. Then subsequent years, you pay $425. And that gives you, just yourself, access to any of the lakes. And then you pay by person, what we call a daily rod fee. And that averages about $130 a day per person. I have lakes that are $70 a day. I have lakes that are $275 a day. And then you can also fish a half day, which is 3/4 of the full day rate. I know all these numbers get confusing, but a half day is considered You can do an AM or a PM. So that's dawn till noon or noon to dusk. And you pay 3/4 of the full day rate. And then if you wanted to have your spouse and children go, children 12 and under fish for free, and 13 to 17 fish for half price at 98% of the lakes. And so if you want to take advantage of those kids rates, you get a family membership, and that's $550 a year as opposed to $425. And then the silver membership is the same thing, and I think it's $100 to join and $200 for a individual and $250 for a family. So it's about half the price of a standard gold membership.
I think it's from my perspective, super reasonable. Like that is to have access to private fishing, $500. I mean, to me, that is fantastic when you're talking about the access. And then if you're bringing friends, obviously I'd assume if you had two members that were both gold members, they're not having to pay an additional rod fee if they're fishing together or something.
No, they do. Each member pays their own rod fee. So if you have four guys and it's $125 to go fishing, that's $600 reservation. So it has to do with how much pressure we're putting on the lake. And there are some properties where we've come to the agreement with the landowner, it's not worth his while to have somebody on his property to make $100. So we have to have a two-person minimum. So some of our properties, in order for, you know, there just isn't enough juice in the squeeze on some of these properties. You know, if it's a 3,000 acre ranch with a 70 acre lake, you know what it costs? I mean, that's tens of millions of dollars to own that ranch, and he's not interested in opening that ranch to make $100. So we've got to have a little more than a single person paying $100 to go fish. So
sure. That makes sense. Okay. And how many members are in the club roughly at this time?
We have 974 as of this morning.
Wow.
That's active members. Yeah.
Wow. So cool. So do you have some guys that have been there, you know, for the full time frame? I mean, some veteran members, if you will.
We have some guys. So the club started in August of 1997, and we have some members who are August of 1997 members. Absolutely. We recognize those guys. We appreciate those guys. Yeah. There aren't a whole lot left. That's been 28 years, 27 years ago. So,
yeah. That's really cool. That's awesome. So, how often are these lakes changing over? Meaning, club is run for a while, landowner's enjoying it. It's all great. But then it says, you know, hey, I'm selling the ranch, or hey, I'm going to just have this to myself. And then you're having to kind of take those away. Are they pretty consistent staying year after year, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So, we rarely, and I used to use the word never, I can say never, but it's virtually never lose a property. We only lose them when they sell. And the new owners bought it. And, you know, if you've got a 40 acre lake on a 30 acre or 50 acre lake on a property, likely that was one of the main reasons you bought that property. And they're like, man, I just bought this thing, and we're going to use it like crazy. And then what often happens is 4 years later, 5 years later, they call us and say, hey, do you remember us? We're like, yeah, well, we're interested, and we're not using it like we thought. And we'd be interested in talking to you about leasing it out again. And those conversations are usually fun. But yeah, once it's hard to get them to visualize starting doing this. But once they start, our landowners, they're great, and our members are great, and it just seems to work. Mm-hmm. But convincing a landowner to allow, in his mind, strangers, even though they're vetted through private water fishing, these are some of these ranches are multi-generational, and this is where I grew up, and you know, I grew up as a kid, my granddad, blah, 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 blah. And we just, you know, we're private people. We don't want people on our property. And so I've been in sales my whole life. So I have to kind of figure out how I navigate that world of, you know, seeing if we're a good fit or not. So
absolutely. Makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. I just being around the farm and ranch real estate space too, you know, certainly plenty of landowners that are, would want nothing to do with it. Right. It just is what it is. And then there's some that, that certainly are open to that. And I think the, to me, the management component is a great way to kind of cross that bridge, you know, is to say, here's what we're providing. You still have access. Of course you want to take your kids fishing. And does that work for them as far as, is there like block out weeks or days, kind of like it would be an Airbnb owner kind of a thing?
Exactly. So the landowner, when they sign up, they can either just call us and say, hey, I'll close this weekend now. Or they have access. They have a login just like our members do. They have a calendar. They can see exactly who's fishing, when they're fishing. They may not have remembered that email that they got, you know, 8 days ago that said Steve and Adam are coming out on Tuesday. But they can go to their calendar and look, and then they can black out as much as they want, as often as they want. Some of our places are active hunting ranches, and so we don't even, we're closed at hunting season. You know, they're, they don't want anybody out. Hunting pays a lot of money. And so, and it's the slow time of the year for us anyway, so it's not a big deal. And we still have, you know, 80 properties that are, you know, you can go to as a member. So, yeah. You can close it down as much or as little as you want, anytime you want. So the only thing we would ask is if we have a paying member out there, that you would not be fishing as a landowner during the time frame that the member's fishing. We kind of, that's probably the only, you know, part where the landowner wouldn't be able to fish the pond when he or she may have wanted to fish if we have some active reservation on the property. But we've also been, you know, sometimes a landowner will forget. He's been a buying at cost and say, hey, guys, I totally forgot my grandkids are coming in this weekend and we've got a reservation. Is there anything you can do to help me? And we'll call the member, and 99% of the time our member's gracious enough to say, hey, yeah, no worries. I'll go to, you know, XYZ Ranch instead. And so we'll look to move them to another place. So it doesn't happen very often, but, you know, once in a while. So we really, the landowners are the key to making this work. And so we bend over backwards to make that relationship work and to keep them happy. So.
Sure. No, I mean, that's the crux of it all, right? I mean, you got to have that player there. I mean, that's the, what your asset is in this case, as far as what they're, what's been able to be fished. So how does insurance work? That's a question just around all of this, for the landowner's sake, for your sake, just thinking through of, you know, something could go wrong. There's this ranch, people on water, everything else. What does it look like?
Yeah. So Texas has some of the most landowner friendly laws, in the nation, meaning it has to be pretty gross negligence on a landowner's part for you to have the ability to sue a landowner. I mean, it would have to be something pretty egregious that the landowner, I can't give you a good example or recite it, but again, we carry the insurance. It's expensive, and it keeps getting more and more expensive, but we've never had a claim. We've never had anyone attempt to sue us, in all the years that we've done this. And so, but we do carry in $1 million, $2 million aggregate policy for each of our landowners while our members are on their property. And then of course the stuff you sign when you join, you know,
sure.
Pretty make, you know, we'd like to think it makes us pretty, us and the landowners, pretty secure. We've never had it tested. Thank goodness, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Insurance stuff is just, man, it's crazy to me. And the costs too are just, explode.
Yeah. Sure. So. Yeah. Yeah.
So big picture, what's your, I guess, take right now with where private water fishing is? Bought the company 14 years ago, have expanded it since then. What's the big picture? Is this something that you want to continue outside of Texas and Oklahoma? Is that the target? Is that where you feel comfortable? What's the big picture with the brand?
Yeah, great question. So I looked into, I joined something, the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program, gosh, probably 8-10 years ago, went through that, by the way, outstanding program Goldman Sachs put on. And, you know, my growth model was to franchise it. I won't get into all the specifics, but it's a difficult model to franchise. And so we're growing internally, and with about 2 million new people coming to Texas every year, it's limitless. And we're getting more and more people from the West Coast that are fly fishermen that are coming in. And so we're still growing. In fact, we're growing pretty, you know, we're going well, if that's the right word. So the expansion is just within the state, and there's still lots and lots of opportunities. I'm going to visit two new places tomorrow and Friday down in the Austin area. And so we have a very, very robust direct mail campaign. We've identified lakes that we actively target. We actively try to have conversations with. We've got a lot of marketing strategies to reach those landowners. And we've been immensely successful doing that. I don't hope that doesn't sound, you know, boasting, but it used to be we couldn't grow because we couldn't find enough lakes. Well, we've figured out the how to add new lakes. And so for the first time in the last, probably the last 18 months, we've been actively out soliciting, trying for new members. And we haven't had that luxury before. We've only been able to grow as fast as we can find the lakes. So we had to figure out how to reach landowners and get them more interested, which we now have figured out. So now it's the other way. We got to go get some more members.
Got it. Got it. Good position to be in. That's awesome. This is kind of the yin and the yang of it. You got to have both sides.
Sure. Yeah. We have two customers. We have the landowners, and we have, of course, our great membership.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever have any landowners just reach out direct and say, hey, I've seen what you guys have going via social media, find the website, whatever it may be, and say, hey, I want to get involved?
Yeah. In fact, I don't know why it took us so long, but just about a year ago, maybe 18 months ago, we put on our website, hey, you got property, contact us. And I've been shocked at how many. Now, usually those are a lot of, hey, I've got a 2-acre pond and, you know, heebie-jeebie. Yeah. But, you know, every once in a while you'll get one. Some guy's got a 50-acre lake and a great part of the state, and, or Oklahoma or Louisiana or wherever. And it leads to a good conversation. But, yeah, our social media – our SEO has been, you know, if you type anything in that has to do with private lake water, private fishing, we're going to be the first, second, fifth thing on that, you know, Google first page. And so, and that, you know, that just comes from doing it a long time and being aware of those type things. And we figured out how to do SEO a long time ago, and that's been boom. And now we're navigating through the muddy waters of social media.
Yeah.
Influencers and trying to herd, you know, it's like herding cats. Sometimes those guys, they're a big part of our business, but they also, they love to fish, but don't always like to provide the content after they go fishing. So we're having to navigate how to best handle that. So.
Sure. Yeah. Understood. Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, Steve, I really appreciate you taking the time out. I know you've got a hard stop here coming up. So just wanted to thank you for your time. If anyone's interested, all the links will be below, guys, in the show notes as far as Private Water Fishing's website information regarding that. Is there anything else you want to share as far as for folks in both landowners as well as individuals interested in checking out what you guys have going on?
No, you asked all the good questions. We're looking for both landowners, and we're looking for members, and love to get the word out. And thank you for having me on the show, and I appreciate you reaching out to me.
Absolutely, Steve. No doubt. And we'll have to connect sometime in person. We'll certainly be at the Classic this upcoming year. So we'll be down in the Ray Roberts area, all that. So would love to in route travel and whatever else, go grab a beer with you, grab lunch or something else. So
love it. Thank you.
Yep. All right. Have a good one, Steve. We'll talk to you later.
Bye, Adam.